ladies and gentlemen, turn up the volume because this is The Huddle here in Lennoxville on CJMQ 88.9 The Cube. Joining me in the studio are Ryan David and Stone Sousa. We have a great jam-packed show for you guys today. Of course, we'll have the rest of the crew, Dylan and Nate, joining us. And we're looking at the new NFL head coaches, discussing if Jimmy Garoppolo is worth $137 million. Looking at the NFL honors, did they get it right? And our fan poll subject of the week, you guys chose for us to talk about the Eagles. Can they win back-to-back Super Bowls? And finally, I'll be breaking up the huddle with one of the most controversial subjects in the last 20 years, cheating. But before, let's talk about this All-Star break coming up. Stone, what do you have for me?
I'm really looking forward to the All-Star weekend. Like every year, that's basically the only thing I do when the All-Star week comes around. Watch the All-Star game, the Rising Stars Challenge, and the skills competition, like the dunk contest and three-point challenge. I mean, it's just fun basketball. Like you get a break from, you know, the everyday rigors of the schedule, and you get a chance to watch, you know, like 2K. Chance to play watch these guys perform outside of their, you know, their serious elements and have fun with the game. Like I'm really looking forward to watching first time guys like Victor Oladipo, mm-hmm. you know, Karl-Anthony Towns and Joel Embiid, seeing how they perform. I mean, Ben Simmons should have been there, but that's a different story for another day. But I'm really looking forward to watching guys like that perform, especially since this is their first time there. Like it's easy for LeBron, you know, he's been there like what, 10 straight times. Like this is the same routine, but you know, you get some fresh blood and hopefully the game will be a little more competitive this year as well.
Yeah, and I'm more excited for the skills part of it, the slam dunk contest, the three-point challenge. Those are really the two aspects of All-Star Weekend that I look forward to most, and we got some pretty fun names in those. I mean, the slam dunk contest this year, we have Dennis Smith Jr., high flyer.
Yep.
We have Larry Nance Jr., who's a new Cavalier, so we know I'll be rooting for him. We have, like you said, Oladipo's in the mix this year, and Donovan Mitchell got in because of the Gordon injury, so he's gonna be flashy. I'm expecting a lot from him. And then you move on to the three-point contest, and there's some shooters in there this year.
Shooters, yeah.
And Steph Curry decided not to be in it this year, which...
It's fine.
I think it's fine, yeah. Right? You get to see some new faces. So we got Devin Booker, Wayne Ellington, guys like Bradley Beal, Kyle Lowry, which... I guess, you know,
yeah,
like,
he's not really a three-point shooter, I guess, but he's got to be
Tobias Harris, Eric Gordon, and of course you got your Klay Thompsons, your Paul Georges. So it's going to be exciting, man. I'm really looking forward to the weekend. I know weekends haven't been the same since NFL has ended, so it finally gives me something to look forward to.
Yeah, just going off that, like the Rising Stars game, we're looking forward to watching the Team World against Team USA, because last few years Team World has been giving it to Team USA. Usually USA is the best basketball players, but you know, you've seen the rise of Ben Simmons, Joel Embiid, you know, Andrew Wiggins, guys like that coming from, you know, overseas or, you know, across the border, really shows that basketball has grown internationally.
All right, so before we talk about these new Cavaliers, are we Team LeBron or is Team Curry?
Team LeBron. It's not even a question.
Team LeBron. It's Team
I don't
LeBron.
Even care who he's playing with anymore, all these injuries. I'm just going and rocking with my guy.
It's KD and LeBron the same team. Like.
Yeah, it's not even fair. All right, so the Cavaliers were super clutch at the trade deadline, and... Let me say, Isaiah is finally gone. For a guy that wants... I'm rooting for LeBron, and that was the biggest problem. They needed Isaiah out of there. I think this team got a lot younger, more dynamic. And the two games we have, like, it's a small sample, but Boston and OKC are legit teams, and those were two legit wins.
How about those Cleveland Cavaliers, man?
How about them, Ryan?
I mean, every show we've talked about Cleveland so far, I've been telling everybody, don't worry. The Cavs will be fine. They'll figure it out. The trade deadline was coming up, and look what they did. They got rid of a whole bunch of guys who were basically doing nothing, except for Dwayne Wade. I'll give him the credit. He was performing, but hey, out of respect to him, shipping back to Miami.
Yeah.
And look at all these new guys we got. We got Larry Nance. We got Jordan Clarkson, mm-hmm. Rodney Hood, George Hill. Those are four huge acquisitions. Not only are they younger, they're more athletic. They're more energized. You see the effort running up and down the court, playing defense for a change, finally. Which is nice to watch. And they can shoot. They can create plays. They can score. And Stone and I were talking about this earlier, actually. They know their role. George Hill said it himself. LeBron James is Batman, and we all have to be Robins. So, and as crazy as that is to say, it's true. This is LeBron James's team. He's the greatest player in the world. And if you just give him those pieces he needs, they're going to get it done. And we've seen that.
Yeah, they look like a completely different team. These last two games, like you said, Zach, Boston, OKC, I watched those games. And they are not the same team before that deadline. Like, the new pieces that Ryan alluded to, they are phenomenal. Like, I don't know what Utah was doing trading Rodney Hood. Like, he was lighting up the Western Conference. And now I give him LeBron? It's a wrap. This guy's a great 3-point shooter. George Hill has experience in the playoffs. Jordan Clarkson and Larry Nance were doing a lot on the Lakers, yeah. especially with Lonzo out. And Jordan Clarkson's last few games, he kind of off the bench and put up like 20.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't think I've seen him miss a shot.
They're all been playing incredible. They've been defensively, they've been hustling, they've been getting steals, they've been forcing turnovers. Yeah. And like you said, offensively, they've been extremely efficient. Yeah.
And my favorite stat of all this is the fact that the bench, usually as soon as LeBron's off, the Cavs are struggling. And then they get behind, and then LeBron has to come back and make up for it. But the bench in the last two games, OKC and Boston, is plus 61 combined.
Incredible.
That's huge. Yeah. Like, I was watching the bench. Cavaliers team, no LeBron, actually producing, making plays, making shots. I don't remember the last time I've seen a Cavaliers team without LeBron produce that much.
And I mean, these new pieces here, they afford Tyronn Lue some more lineup flexibility. Like, he can switch guys on different players. Like, Rodney Hood can now defend 1 through 5, probably.
Yeah.
When Isaiah was on the court, he's not defending anybody. Maybe he's not even defending himself.
Whoever he's defending has the ball.
Yeah, exactly.
And I think the most important parts of these trades is you see how it affected LeBron James.
Yeah.
I mean, there was a report that came out that they informed LeBron James on the trades they would be making prior to the Minnesota game. And since then, the numbers that LeBron has put up are just ridiculous. He's happy again. He's performing. And when LeBron James is playing at this level, the Cleveland Cavaliers are an extremely difficult team to beat.
And even when Ryan, we were just talking about this on the way here. Ryan was talking about Colin Cowherd saying, Boston has won all these trades. You know, they made the right move for Kyrie. They signed Gordon Hayward. Obviously got hurt, but he's still the right move. Al Horford paying off well. It's an all-star. But they're still not able to compete with the Cavs.
Yeah.
And it just shows like that's how good LeBron is. And these guys that are playing with him are hungry. They want to win. Like Utah, the Lakers, and you know, the Spurs when George Hill was there, obviously they were making the playoffs, but they weren't doing anything.
Mm-hmm.
So you got to look at how LeBron is upping their game. Cuz you know when LeBron turns like average guys into studs. Same thing that Tom Brady does with receivers.
Mhm. Yeah. And let me add this. The one thing that surprised me the most about all these trades is that they kept the Brooklyn pick.
Yeah.
That was huge. Being able to pull all this off, get all these players that complement LeBron so well, and keep that pick, everybody's happy.
Exactly. And that's a great move. I mean, I personally, with all these moves, think Cavs are clear favorites in the East. And I do think that there is a good chance that they could win it all this year, assuming they keep playing at this level. And if that's the case and they do compete in the finals, I don't see LeBron leaving. So if you keep LeBron James and have that Brooklyn pick, then that's an even scarier team. And like you said, keeping the Brooklyn pick, if LeBron does leave, then that's insurance for the Cavs' future. With all these young guys that they provided and now that potential first overall pick, that was a great move by the Cavs GM.
Yeah, and I think the Cavs do have a legit shot to win this year. Not to say that they didn't before, but now their chances are increased. And just watching the Golden State game on Wednesday when they played Portland, their defense is brutal. Like, these guys are like sleepwalking through games. They think they have it made already. They're complacent. They don't even have the best record in the NBA anymore. Yeah, they're bored.
They're so bored.
Yeah. Damian Lillard was cooking them. Like, I mean, he was giving Steph Curry the business on every single possession. And Steph Curry was 3-for-10 on Wednesday. Obviously, KD dropped 50. But if KD's not on the Warriors this year, I don't think they're maybe top three. Like, I think they're extremely like overvalued right now. KD's a 7-footer who can pull up from 30. You don't find those very often in the NBA.
Obviously, yeah, I mean, KD's the second best player in the league, and he plays like it. And that's the one thing I was saying about Golden State before they got KD was that oftentimes the Golden State was a very inconsistent team because they're comprised of nothing but shooters. Yeah. So when your shooters are off, then there was nothing they could provide. But the addition of Kevin Durant, like you said, he brings that superstar status. He brings that consistency. So Kevin Durant's able to put that team on his back when his teammates are struggling and bring them out of that hole.
And what's the one flaw we see Golden State every single game this year? When they're going up against, when they have a center on the opposing team who gets a bunch of boards, they're in trouble. Like Clint Capella, every time he plays Golden State, Golden State is like mind blown. They don't want to defend this guy. What happens when Kevin Love comes back? Kevin Love's a better version of Clint Capella.
Yes, sir.
And is Zaza Pachulia guarding Kevin Love? No. Draymond Green, maybe, but Draymond Green is not an offensive threat. Clint Capella is. Kevin Love can definitely be a factor if they do match up in the finals.
And bringing up Kevin Love is interesting because we're seeing how good the Cavaliers look right now, and they're missing arguably the second best player on their team.
I'd all-star. Say second best.
Yeah, an all-star. So when Kevin Love comes back, it's just going to bring this team to another level. And like we said, it's only been two games, and look how good these new guys are meshing with the team. So once they get more time, more chemistry, and all that, I think arguably Cleveland is is going to give, whether it be Golden State or Houston, a run for their money. They're definitely in much better shape now than they were before that trade deadline.
So, Ryan, you're saying that the Cleveland, they have the East locked down?
Zach, Cleveland, before the trade deadline, you guys heard me saying it, they were going to win the East. Was it going to be a cakewalk through the East before the trade deadline? No. But I think now with these acquisitions and how good they look, I think Cleveland is back to Cleveland. I think they probably sweep the first couple rounds and come Eastern Conference Finals. They'll probably win in five, maybe six games. But the East is theirs.
Let me just provide a perspective of the Eastern Conference for our listeners right now. Boston, overrated. Without Kyrie, they can't put the ball in the net. Toronto, I've seen this movie every year. They touch the playoffs, they're completely, like, there's a disappearing act. It's like the same thing with the Chiefs. See the Chiefs in the playoffs? They're not the same team. Mm-hmm. Who else they got? The Bucks. Good luck. Wizards are a mess. John Wall and Marcin Gortat can't even seem to look at each other. Indiana, Oladipo's not leading you to a final. And you got LeBron with the Cavs, and with all this help, even if you had the other team, they're still going to the finals, but they would not have won. Now with new, hungrier players, guys who want to play with LeBron, who know their role.
The biggest thing.
It's a complete wrap. The Eastern Conference is done this year. That's signed, sealed, and delivered. I'm looking forward to watching the Western Conference, whoever plays Cleveland in the finals.
And I've said it time and time again this year. Everybody was freaking out, and there's always a period in the year where people freak out about Cleveland. Oh, this is the year that LeBron's not going to make it. This is that. They're not good. And then they go back to being the Cleveland Cavaliers with LeBron James. I said it then. I said it now. There's nobody in the Eastern Conference that will take down the Cleveland Cavaliers.
It's 82-game schedule. I mean, guys are going to get complacent throughout the season. It happens.
So I know this is going to be a subject for another week, but do the Warriors have the West locked down?
I don't know. I think the Rockets right now have a legit chance. Because the Warriors right now, when I watch them, oh, man, like, it's something else. It's not the same team. It's a completely night and day and night when you watch the Warriors from last year to this year. Guys, they don't even listen to Steve Kerr. They're coaching each other in the sidelines still. Can't even get the job done.
Yeah, he just gave them the clipboard.
Yeah.
Let him coach themselves.
He's trying to reach his players. And even yesterday, on Wednesday, he's calling timeouts. Guys aren't really doing much. They go on the court, do their own thing, miss, like, 30-foot jump shots, don't rebound, don't play defense. Portland should not be winning games against Golden State. But Damian Lillard and CJ McCollum came to play. Golden State didn't.
But, I mean, let's look at it this way again, right? Like, just Golden State is sort of the Cleveland at this point of the West, right? Mm-hmm. So they're so used to being the best in their conference. They're so used to making it to the finals at this point that, like we said earlier, they could just be bored. I don't think they have the West locked down. I don't think it's a lock. Don't get me wrong. Houston's a great team. Mm-hmm. But I think they're easily still the favorite in the mm-hmm. East. Yeah. In the West, excuse me. I think they're definitely coming out of the West. You look at a team like Houston, Chris Paul, every time playoff comes around, he gets hurt. So will
James
he be
Harden
around?
Disappears too.
Exactly. James Harden, come playoff time, not the same player as the regular season. So to me, Houston, as good as they look, they still have a lot to prove before they can get past the Golden State in the seven games.
Let's not forget about OKC either. Paul George, Russell Westbrook, I think they can make some noise. But just going off the finals runs that Golden State's had, are they getting tired? Like, are they feeling the grind of getting back to a finals every year? Like, we overlook LeBron's accomplishments getting to the finals, but just reaching the finals every year.
Spectacular.
It's amazing. Like, Golden State's realizing it's a grind to get back.
That's all we're hearing. Oh, my guys are tired. I can't reach out to them. You know, they're sick of hearing my voice. Man, if you can't appreciate LeBron now, doing that with two different teams, he's going for his eighth in a row.
Yeah,
it's incredible. And I heard this. He had a post game interview recently, and the one of the interviewers asked him, "So how does it feel playing less minutes now?" He's like, "It doesn't matter to me. I can play 18 or 38. At the end of the day, I'm still doing my job, and I'm still helping my teammates win games." So LeBron he could play out the whole game. It doesn't matter because I know the Cavs are coming for the Warriors' head this year.
Yes, sir.
All right. Next, we're going into the NFL and talking about these new head coaches. Next on the Huddle.
This is 88.9 CJMQ FM, Sherbrooke, Quebec, Canada.
Switching gears to the NFL, I'm with Dylan and Stone here. We're talking the new NFL head coaches. We have seven teams with new head coaches: the Cardinals, Bears, Lions, Colts, Giants, Raiders, and the Titans. So, guys, who should we keep an eye on, and who's overhyped right now in the NFL?
Well, for one, to keep an eye on, watch out for Steve Wilks at Arizona. He was a great DC in Carolina in his lone season there. He continued the Carolina tradition of great defense, and players have raved about his no-nonsense approach to football. Like, he doesn't put up with anything, and going to Arizona on a defense led with strong personalities like Tyrann Mathieu, Patrick Peterson, I think that he'll definitely continue their winning culture there. The only problem is they don't have a quarterback, so I don't know how, and especially since he's not an offensive guy, how he's going to develop that position. But I think he can definitely keep the Cardinals in contention in a strong NFC West. And going on to the guy who's most overhyped, definitely Matt Patricia. That guy looks like an assistant through and through. You want to say no way, but the stats back it up. Every time there's 9 people that have left Bill Belichick to become head coaches. Their combined record as a head coach is 156 and 227. That's a below 500 record. Only one of those guys has an over 500 record, which is 9-7, which is barely getting over 500. I mean, these guys leave Bill Belichick. They think people look at Belichick and they're like, these guys are going to be great. But just because you're close to greatness doesn't mean you're great. We've seen it. Charlie Weiss, Romeo Crennel, those guys have led their own teams and they've led them to the ground. Josh McDaniels left Denver in a worse position than when he got there. I mean, these guys aren't that good. Like, it's the system in New England that helps these guys develop their craft. But when they leave, they're trying to be Bill. Yep. Like, even Josh McDaniels said it. I was trying to be Bill. You're not. Be your own guy. I know Matt Patricia says he's not. He's trying to be his own guy. But, you know, when push comes to shove, they'll go back to their old habits and he'll go back to being Bill. So, I mean, that's a guy that's definitely overhyped. But I
can see the statistics there, Stone, making a case for coaches coming out of New England and not being successful in their careers. But the one thing I really like about Patricia, and maybe I'm the only optimist in the huddle today, but what I really, really like is that Patricia is a defensive mind going into a team which in the past years has struggled defensively. Their issues have not been offensively. And yes, in today's modern day football, a lot of owners look to bring in guys that are going to be, you know, offensive minded, more quarterback driven to develop the quarterbacks. But that's the least of the Lions' issues. They have a franchise quarterback in Matt Stafford. And let's not forget defensively. I mean, Detroit's a top 15 defense with great corners. I mean, last year they struggled a little bit with pass rush and they need some linebackers. But I think I like Patricia. I really like that fit myself. I hate the Patriots, but I like this fit with Matt Patricia coming into New England.
I mean, if he develops that defense and makes them great, I mean, I'm all for it. But if that defense isn't any good, that's his calling card. So he's selling the Lions on his defense. And if he can't turn that defense around, by all means, he's got to get out of there. Because he'll end up back in New England because no other team is going to take a chance on this guy who's a one-time head coach and seen what he's done outside New England, which is nothing.
Yeah, my thing with Matt Patricia is, like, I like Matt Patricia as a DC, but as a head coach, how much credit can we really give him with the Patriots? Because we all know Belichick's a defensive guy, so how big of a role was Matt Patricia in scheming the defense and prepping for all these different teams? Because at the end of the day, it is Bill's operation, you know? And if you want to give him credit, well, then let's look at last year's Patriots defense. They were ranked 30th in yards, and they crumbled, and I repeat, crumbled in the Super Bowl. Biggest stage, I didn't recognize the defense, and they weren't even good to start with, but then in the red zone, at least they were top 5 in the red zone, and in the Super Bowl, they got exposed by a backup quarterback. So that's where Matt Patricia, for me, doesn't have enough in his resume for me to think that, okay, yeah, he can go in here as a defensive-minded head coach and turn this team around.
Yeah, and another two guys that I'm a little skeptical of at the moment. First, Mike Vrabel. I think this guy's going to be a great head coach. He has all the tools to become one. The only problem is his defense in Houston last year was ranked 20th. And you're selling your fan base on a head coach whose defense is ranked 20th with Jadeveon Clowney. Who else they got? Whitney Mercilus. J.J. Watt, I know he got hurt, but he's on that defense.
Yeah.
And you're ranked 20th. It's a hard sell. I mean, especially with Marcus Mariota, the way that the fans want him to throw the ball. You've seen Tennessee games. They run the ball down your throat all game. And when the run game doesn't work, well, chalk up an L because they ain't throwing. They need an offensive mind. I know they brought in the Rams offensive coordinator, but he has a lot of pressure on him to turn around Marcus Mariota and help him develop as a passer.
And personally, for me, Mike Vrabel, as exciting as he is, being, you know, he's just that guy that you think is going to be a great head coach one day.
Yeah.
All I can think with Vrabel is he's going to be a rough draft in Tennessee for the next 2 to 3 years.
I think this might be too soon for him right now. Yeah, I don't think he's ready. It is one season early. As a T, that's a lot of pressure to put on him. The second guy I want to get to is Matt Nagy. Now, this guy, his name doesn't even sound like a head coach. That's to begin with. He didn't even call plays in Kansas City last year. How can you hire as the Bears organization a coach who didn't call plays and you have a rookie quarterback? Mitch Trubisky is the franchise in Chicago. And if you hire, that's definitely not saying much. I don't know why they drafted him to begin with, but that's a different story.
Just imagine being in Trubisky's position, sitting in your locker, finding out that the new hire was Matt Nagy. Yeah. I mean, like,
I don't know.
Who is that? Who are you talking about?
Yeah, like he didn't even do anything. Like, I don't even know what he did in Kansas City.
I think as the Bears, or just as the organization, like you got to bring in, you just invested in a pick that you're saying last year, Trubisky is going to be our guy.
Back him up. Give him some help.
Yeah, let's get him an offensive mind. Like, personally, and we'll go to John Gruden, but that's what I really like with what the Raiders did, is that they at least brought in somebody that, okay, he hasn't coached in 17 years, but he was proven at one point in time, right? I mean, Matt Nagy, like
he's fresh. I don't even know what he's going to do. Like, what system he's going to run? How is he going to do calling plays? Like, in the NFC North with Minnesota, Aaron Rodgers coming back, and Detroit, oh boy. This is not the AFC West, which is Denver was brutal last year. Oakland was underwhelming. I mean, this is going to be...
someone calling the plays for you.
Yeah, this is going to be tough. I mean, he might be, along with Matt Patricia, those might be quick stints as head coaches.
Hey, and let's get to John Gruden, because
That's your guy, Tucker.
When I knew we were talking head coaches, we could not... And we've done a segment already, but I just got so much to say to John Gruden. I'm just way too excited for John Gruden to come into Oakland. And again, let's talk about, you know, Oakland invested in a 10-year, $100 million contract. And you know what? Big shoes to fill.
He's got players,
guess what? We're going to Vegas in a couple years. He's got a few years in Oakland. I think it's exciting times if you're a Raiders fan.
I'm definitely looking forward to John Gruden. I think he has all the pieces, especially in the AFC West, to make a big run for the Super Bowl next year. He might not win it. He might not meet those expectations. But I think within a few years, he'll end up being the best coaching hire out of this class.
And definitely, when we look at the coaches through up and down of the new
he has the most experience.
Absolutely. I mean, he's got to be the name that pops out the most.
And even Pat Shurmur, he didn't do anything in Cleveland. I mean, anything. I know all coaches struggle in Cleveland, but still, hiring retreads is a big no-no in the NFL. You saw what Jack Del Rio did in Oakland. Absolutely nothing. We've seen these guys get head coaching jobs year after year. Jeff Fisher, Mr. 500. I mean, look what the Rams hire Sean McVay. They're in the playoffs. So, I mean, you got to hire guys with some fresh blood. But just to get to next year's head coaching hot seat, Marvin Lewis, you got to go.
He should have been out already. The fact, I looked this up and
15 years, no playoff wins? None?
As soon as I saw that, I didn't know it was that bad. I looked and I saw he was 0-7 in the playoffs. What are you doing, Cincinnati?
He lost to TJ Yates.
What are you trying to do here, Cincinnati? You know, your quarterback is meh. Your coach is just bad. He can't win a playoff game. So what's going on here? Are you not trying to progress? And 15 years, we're not talking about like 5 years or like, okay, let's try to...
They gave him an extension this year.
Yeah, a 2-year extension. A 2-year extension for Marvin Lewis. And look, some people can say, oh yeah, Hugh Jackson still has a job with the Cleveland Browns and he's 1-31.
He hasn't been there for 15 years though.
But yeah, he hasn't been there for 15 years. And for me, Hugh Jackson... The Browns just need some type of stability. Yeah. You know, it's always new quarterback, new coach, new quarterback. Look, let the Browns have a stable coach for maybe... Look, I'd give him... If next year, they're still...
If you go in 16 again, they're 16, done.
Yeah, get him out. But if they're anything above 4 and they're just showing progress with this new draft class, they have 2 top 5 picks, which is unheard of. That's crazy. So if he does nothing, okay, get him out. But if he does something... See where it goes, but Marvin Lewis, Cincinnati, if you're listening to this, probably not. But if you are, get him out of there. It's over.
What does that say to your fan base that you gave a coach who has won a playoff game an extension?
If I was a Cincinnati fan, I'd be so...
I'd be angry, jumping ship.
I'd be depressed. And yeah, like, okay, who's the next team? I'd probably be a 49ers fan now because this team isn't going anywhere.
They're basically telling your fans, we're good with being average. We're good with taking your money, and we won't win any games.
Well, hey, but that was just this year. We got to remember, I think it's just the complacency with Cincinnati that every year, I mean, I think they just keep them around because they know they're going to be in a competition at the end of the year for the playoffs, you know, to win the division. And, I mean, you're not doing too bad, but you're also, like, Cincinnati expects to win Super Bowls. They want to compete. Let's not forget. But, it's ridiculous.
That's a stretch.
And I'm telling you right now, you're not going to be doing that with Marvin Lewis as your head coach. There's no way. You got to get him out, and... You got to bring somebody else in, that's for sure.
Time's up for Marvin Lewis.
Yep, and time's up for this segment. Next, we're talking about Jimmy Garoppolo and his brand new contract.
Don't forget the website, www.cjmq.fm.
Staying in the NFL, we're talking about Jimmy Garoppolo, who got his brand new contract with the San Francisco 49ers, $137 million. I'm with Dill and Nate. Dylan, does Jimmy Garoppolo deserve $137
million? $137 million? Oh my golly. Let me tell you. Okay, I understand it's a quarterback-driven league and all this nonsense nowadays, and that Jimmy Garoppolo was 6-0 as a starter taking over for San Francisco, and hoorah, hooyay, everybody's happy because, you know, San Francisco's winning football games. Hey, let's give credit. Jimmy Garoppolo is even 8-0 in his career. He has never lost a game. But $137 million for that small of a resume? I'm sorry, no way. I'm not doing it. Oh, you tell me what you think about that, Nate.
Hey, know what? Jimmy G's agent must be Tom Cruise because he's getting shown the money. Show me the money. Jimmy G is definitely worth this contract. There's no way. There's nothing anyone can tell me on why Jimmy G is not worth.
Aside from him being 8-0, tell me right now why he is worth $137
million. Can I jump in?
Yeah, go ahead.
All right. So when I look at a quarterback's worth, short term, I look at talent. And again, when I talk about value, a team's jump or drop when the quarterback is added or removed. And what did we see with San Francisco last year? Huge jump. Did not look like the same team last year when Jimmy Garoppolo came in. And after that, long-term, replaceability. Is it easy to replace this guy? Do you see him as the face of your franchise? And scarcity. Is there a lot of quarterbacks out there? So answer, not a lot of quarterbacks out there. You can definitely see Jimmy Garoppolo as the face of the 49ers franchise. And replaceability, well, I don't see with who you can replace him with. And yes, he has the talent. And we saw the jump his team made last year. And you know he's poised in big situations because he already has 3 fourth quarter comebacks in his career. And look, the money is extreme. They did go really extravaganza with this deal. You know, they kind of like the Raiders and John Gruden. But the thing that Jimmy Garoppolo doesn't have, like your point, Dill, is that he doesn't have a big resume. But for me is that, honestly, when you see that much in so little time from a quarterback, well, you know another team, if you don't offer him that, he can just say, I'll go see the market. And you know another team out there really needs a quarterback, and they would give out that type of money. So am I saying he's worth $137 million? I don't know now. Right now, I'm not sure. But was it a smart move? 100%. I agree with what the 49ers did here. But before we start debating that, let me make this blind test. And this is not really on the Jimmy Garoppolo, is he worth it point. It's on something else. So quarterback A has 65.1% completions. Quarterback B has 67.4. Quarterback A has 1,300 total yards. Quarterback B has 1,565. Quarterback A, 9 touchdowns, 2 interceptions. Quarterback B has 7 touchdowns, 5 interceptions, and both have the exact same passer rating. They both played for the same team, and it's Jimmy Garoppolo and Colin Kaepernick in their last 6 games. And I'm not saying this to say that Jimmy Garoppolo doesn't deserve the money. I'm saying this to point out how the 49ers and the rest of the NFL are hypocrites, because this guy cannot even get a backup job. And he's doing the same exact job in the last 6 games, pretty much debatable, as the now the highest played player in NFL history. So that just frustrated me when I saw these stats. It frustrated me because it just shows the hypocrisy of the 49ers. But now that I vented, all right.
No, yeah, and I completely agree with you. Colin Kaepernick got absolutely snubbed. There's no way that anyone can look at these numbers and tell me that the numbers aren't pretty much hand-in-hand similar.
And let's add, he brought them to a Super Bowl.
Absolutely. But to go back to the narrative One thing that you said that, you know, Jimmy G's contract in comparison to John Gruden, I would take it a step further and say that is more deserving of the 137 than John Gruden is of his contract.
Oh, I could see Tuck fired up right now.
Well, Tucker. Hey, all right. I want to back this all up. Okay, Jimmy Garoppolo, I agree with some of what you're saying, and it is a quarterback-driven league. I agree. Like Zach said, there are very, very few quarterbacks. It's like throwing your rod in the water, trying to fish, and knowing there's only 5 fish but 100 fishers. Everybody in the NFL nowadays wants a quarterback. And so, yes, take the chance on Jimmy Garoppolo. I really, really like that. Don't talk about my man Gruden like that, all right? Because 10 years, 100 million, that's exciting. That's all I got to say about that. But Jimmy Garoppolo, the one thing I want to bring is, why couldn't we bring him in for a little less? You know, you look at Brady. I'm pretty sure he's the 15th to 16th top paid quarterback in the NFL. This is the best of all time. Cut your contract, cut your ties,
but don't forget.
Bring something in around Garoppolo. What is San Francisco going to bring in with Garoppolo when they've demanded that much money to Garoppolo is what I don't understand.
But you have to remember, San Francisco right now has the most money available in their salary cap. And what they get him for? A second round pick. They got him for basically nothing. So instead of taking a risk of him going out in the market and testing the market out, I completely agree with the logic of we have so much money to spend, and they're even after this Garoppolo contract, they're still the highest. They still have the most salary cap space in the NFL. So let's max out his contract. Let's give him a lot of money, and now let's bring the pieces together. You know, let's use the rest of that money to bring him together, because we basically got him last year for nothing. And at the end of the day, for as little as he's done, well, he's proven that he can turn this team around, because he did in six games.
No, and when it comes to Jimmy Garoppolo, you have to look at it at the standpoint where when it comes to Jimmy G, it's an investment. And all investments have a bit of risk. But this risk is completely worth it. Jimmy Garoppolo went up against probably the best defense in the Jacksonville Jaguars and was in an absolute shootout when they made a fourth quarter comeback. And when he went onto the field, the crowd was chanting MVP. You got to give the people what they want. The fans want it. John Lynch, who is the general manager of the 49ers, used to be a former Patriot under Bill Belichick. So I'm pretty sure he has a good idea that if Bill wanted this guy, then there must be something that this guy has to offer. You put him in with Kyle Shanahan, he fits in perfectly. They didn't change a single thing.
Young offensive mind, that's the recipe.
And the 49ers didn't change a single thing else on their roster from when Jimmy G just got there to now. They haven't changed a single thing, and he went undefeated in his last five games. The guy's 7-0, and don't get me wrong, it's a stretch that he's only played seven games, but in this day and age, the main trend is what have you done lately? And right now, lately, Jimmy G is one of the best quarterbacks out there right now. And when it comes to his pay in comparison to someone like Tom Brady does take a lot of pay cuts. If Tom Brady wanted to get the money that he deserved, he'd easily be the highest paid quarterback in the league, no question. But you also have to look at the top three paid quarterbacks in the league right now are Jimmy Garoppolo, Matthew Stafford, and Derek Carr. Where's Aaron Rodgers? You know what I mean? Aaron Rodgers doesn't have this money, but no one said anything when Matthew Stafford got his money. You got to remember that Kirk Cousins is probably going to surpass Jimmy G also with his contract. So
the thing I like the most about the contract, if there is one thing I do like, is that at least we're investing in something younger. I think when we talk about this, you know, this kind of last older generation of quarterbacks, the Bradys, the Rodgers, they've made their share of money. They don't need any more. They're chasing championships. Garoppolo's still young enough, and like we've added there, San Francisco obviously had the money to give him as well. But I mean, it does make sense to invest in something young, which is I think the only thing I like about the contract. And I'll give you my consent here at the huddle that if Jimmy Garoppolo goes and turns this team around and he comes out next year rolling, hey, you can quote me, because you know what I'm saying, he is not worth 137 mil.
No, yeah, I see a lot of great opportunities for the San Francisco 49ers with all this cap space you get. You use your higher draft picks now not on a quarterback but on other pieces to help him. And you use the salary cap, because those rookies that you are going to draft are going to be on low-cheap rookie deals. And you take the rest of the money and you do what the Jacksonville Jaguars did, and you start getting big-name guys, big veteran guys that can help build your program around. There are some things that couldn't go wrong. But I see more of an upside with signing Jimmy G and making sure that you have him for these 5 years that you signed him for.
Mm-hmm. So,
Can I add one thing there? So if Jimmy Garoppolo struggles next year, I don't want anyone to tell me that he doesn't have weapons around him, that he doesn't have a defense. We're going to say it's on Jimmy Garoppolo.
Oh, but he doesn't have it now, though. Because guess
what? We're talking right now about his success he had taking over at the end of the year with no other changes. So no, I'm saying if Jimmy Garoppolo comes out next year and struggles, you are going to hear it. You're getting an earful.
Well, I say that's all based off of what they put around him. Right now, they don't have a lot of things around him. And it is a new look. And when it takes a new face, it takes time for defenses to adjust to what they see. So right now, it could just be a shock on why Jimmy G did get rolling like this and that defenses didn't know how to game plan for him. But coming forward, I don't know, man. I see a lot of good things for Jimmy G.
Hey, agree or don't agree with the money Jimmy Garoppolo is making, at the end of the day, I just see Kyle Shanahan just signed a new 6-year deal with the 49ers, young offensive-minded head coach. Jimmy G just got him his money. And I'm saying the NFC West with the Rams and the 49ers, I think that's going to be a classic rivalry for the years to come, because we've got young quarterbacks, talented quarterbacks that are going to go out it twice a year and probably in the playoffs too.
This is CJMQ 88.9 FM.
All right, so we're back here at the huddle, and we're looking at the NFL honors. Did they get it right? So the MVP was won by Tom Brady. Offensive Player of the Year was won by Todd Gurley. Defensive Player of the Year was taken by Aaron Donald. Offensive Rookie of the Year was won by Alvin Kamara. Marshawn Lattimore won Defensive Rookie of the Year. And Coach of the Year was Sean McVay. I'm with Nate and Ryan. Do we have a problem with these winners?
No, I don't have too much of a problem with any of the winners. There was no decision that took me back by surprise by any various amount. But I think that there was a lot of stiff competition in choosing the winners. And I find that a lot of the other nominees that didn't get picked were almost just as deserving, just by a little bit under, than the ones that did get chosen.
And I'm with Nate. I think they nailed, for the most part, all of them. I have one problem, which I'll get to a little bit later, but Offensive Rookie of the Year, Kamara, what a great season he had. And like you said, stiff competition. Kareem Hunt was in the mix. Mm-hmm. There was a few other guys, maybe a Leonard Fournette and guys Christian McCaffrey, but I think they got that one right. Defensive Player of the Year, again, with the Saints, Marshawn Lattimore, what a year he had. He was asked to lock down some of the greatest players in the game, some of the greatest receivers, like the Julios and guys like that, and he was up for the challenge. He did a great job. MVP, it hurts to say a little bit, but I had called it a while ago. Tom Brady deserved it. He had a great year. I think maybe it would have been – I don't think there was as much competition in this one with the injuries that happened to, like, your Carson Wentz's or your Deshaun Watson's. I don't think anybody else, after those guys went down, really had a chance to win the MVP.
I sort of disagree on that one. I think there was a big talk and a big push for Todd Gurley to win MVP, which I think if they did give it to him, I wouldn't be too much opposed to. Obviously, they did go with Tom Brady, and I don't have a problem with that. But Todd Gurley had a remarkable season this year, and let's not forget about Antonio Brown was just a one-man wrecking show, and he absolutely dominated secondaries the whole season long.
I think that if you're looking at Todd Gurley and Antonio Brown, I think they really got it right here, because Antonio Brown should have been competing for Offensive Player of the Year. And Todd Gurley, same, and that's what he got. Because when you talk about value, and I always say this, when I look at value, I look at what's the drop your team makes when this player is not there, or what's the jump they make when that player is added. Like, a great example is Jimmy Garoppolo. I think it represents just the fact that he was added to the team, and now that team looked completely different with him. That, for me, is true value. And other valuable players, you look at the Aaron Rodgers and Russell Wilsons, because without them, their teams are not much. But without Gurley or without Antonio Brown, those offense can still roll. And I think that's why the quarterbacks have, maybe you can call it, unfair advantage for the MVP, because they have such a huge impact on their whole team.
Yeah, and I think they got it right with not giving Gurley the MVP, because when you look at the 2016 season, David Johnson wasn't really getting as much love for, he should win MVP, as Todd Gurley got this year, when in reality, David Johnson had better stats than Gurley had. I mean, Gurley this year, don't get me wrong, outstanding season. He had 2,093 total yards and 19 touchdowns. But last year in 2016, or 2 years ago, however you want to look at it now, David Johnson had 2,118 yards and 20 touchdowns. So I think if you didn't award David Johnson with the MVP at that point for putting up better numbers than Gurley had this year, then I think they got it right with not giving Gurley the MVP this year.
See, by the way, I'm looking at that, I think that's sort of a flawed narrative, where these players who aren't quarterbacks can only do as much as they are given to. You know what I mean? Like, the quarterbacks have so much to do, and it's such a position that's asked so much. But we can't fault these other guys for doing extremely well in the aspects that they're asked to give. You know, like David Johnson, for instance, I think that year he was deserving of MVP. You know, we look at the quarterback and we say, you know, they throw, they read, this, that, whatever, but we're not looking at the other guys. Like, these other skill positions, not only are they putting their actual physical bodies on the line more frequently, but they're running the ball, they're catching the ball, and they're doing a lot of other dynamic things. So I find, in that sense, the MVP race is sort of flawed as the quarterback award.
Yeah.
But even when when looking at other players, I think that we should be looking even more on the defensive side. There are a lot of defensive players that I think that could be looked at and saying, if they're not there, then what does the defense look like?
Mm-hmm. But I think that the biggest thing is, if this was the CFL and it was called the most outstanding player, because there's no MVP in the CFL, it's the most outstanding player. If that was what it's called in the NFL, we'd be having a totally different conversation right now, because most outstanding player, then I'm thinking of Antonio Brown and Todd Gurley and whoever, just big numbers that's just impressive for their position. You know, something that you've rarely seen in that position. But when you talk about value, at the end of the day, it is called the most valuable player. And that's why I think Antonio Brown got hurt during the Patriots game and that offense was still rolling. You know, Todd Gurley, he was there last year. Why wasn't he getting sick numbers? And I know it's a crazy comparison to say, why wasn't he getting the same numbers? But I mean, he was still there. And they had a horrible season compared to this year, which they had a great season.
And I think that's an interesting segue for Coach of the Year.
Yeah.
Because Coach Sean McVay for the Rams, like you said,
yeah,
the year great prior play. They had the same roster for the most part and couldn't do anything with it. Mm-hmm. And then you bring in this new head coach and they go to the top of their division, nearly to the top of the league, and they did some great things. And I think he was extremely deserving of that award. Again, like Nate said, stiff competition. I think this was probably one of the hardest decisions they had between Sean McVay, Doug Peterson, even Jacksonville's coach, Doug Marrone.
Yeah.
I think this was definitely the hardest choice. But again, I agree. This is one of the awards I agree with. So I think they got this one right.
Because I feel like he didn't only turn that whole team around. He turned his quarterback around. You know, now you could clearly see Jared Goff as a franchise quarterback.
Yeah, Last year,
we were probably questioning, oh, is Jared Goff that guy? And now there's no question in it that he can probably be an elite quarterback in this league for the future.
And when it comes to the Coach of the Year, I wouldn't count out even Mike Zimmer of the Minnesota Vikings.
Yeah,
true. You know, that this is a guy that had a big decision to make when it came to who his quarterback was going to be. And he went with Case Keenum, a guy who I think is even should have been in the topic of Comeback Player of the Year. Case Keenum had an absolute terrible year last year with the Rams. Didn't do a thing. Basically just wet the bed and came into Minnesota and put up big numbers and took his team deep into the postseason.
And let's just take it to the one award that I really disagree with, and I think a certain player got snubbed, and I just want to do it this way. I'm going to do a sort of blind assessment test.
Okay.
And I'm going to read out some numbers, and you guys tell me whether player A or player B should have won the award.
All right.
So for player A, he finished the season with 67 tackles, 14.5 sacks, 3 forced fumbles, 3 pass deflections, and a touchdown.
Okay.
And then you go to player B, and he finished with 41 tackles, 11 sacks, 5 forced fumbles, 2 pass deflections, and no touchdowns. So if you were to choose who would be Defensive Player of the Year, would it have been player A or player B?
Straight off numbers, it'd be player A.
Yeah, I'd go with player A. Other than forced fumbles,
And that's what I'm thinking. Player A was Calais Campbell of the Jacksonville Jaguars, and player B was the person who won the award, and Aaron Donald. And don't get me wrong, Aaron Donald, great defensive player, had a great year, but I think you look at what Calais Campbell provided to that Jacksonville defense as to where they were last year in comparison to what he did for them this year and the numbers he put up, and I think I can truly say of all the awards, this is one player who I feel really did get snubbed.
And I see how you're looking at it, but just to play devil's advocate, when you're looking at the Rams defense in comparison to the Jacksonville defense, there's a tremendous difference in amount of talent level and different weapons. Like, you got to remember that Jacksonville has one of the most elite secondaries that we've seen in years. The linebacker core is probably one of the most athletic in the league. So there's a lot of things that contributed to his success, and I think that that's ultimately why they went with Aaron Donald, because they see that he's putting up not equally good numbers, but close to good numbers, but with the less, you know what I mean? So there are a lot of things that Aaron Donald did that I find that if you put him on Jacksonville and you put Calais Campbell on the Rams, I think that Aaron Donald, in my personal opinion, would have a better season than Calais Campbell.
This is 88.9 CJMQ FM, Sherbrooke, Quebec, Canada.
All right, for our last subject of the week, We had a poll on Facebook, and 68% of you wanted us to talk about the Eagles' chances of winning back-to-back Super Bowls. If you don't already follow us, join the debate. Follow The Huddle on Facebook, and we're also on Instagram and Twitter at The Huddle Talks. So, I'm with Ryan and Stone. Do we give these guys a shot?
Man, let me start by saying how hard it is to repeat. Not only to win a Super Bowl back-to-back, but to even get to the Super Bowl 1 year and even make it back into the playoffs the next. Mm-hmm. I mean, we've all heard about the Super Bowl hangover. I mean, it's a real thing. Some teams beat that, but some teams struggle. And there's a lot of things that go into that. People don't really look into like all the details of why that happens. But when you are the Super Bowl champion and people around the league view you as the best team and the best coaching staff, well, then they come after your coaches and they come after your players. And that's something that we've seen has already happened to Philadelphia. I mean, they lost their offensive coordinator in Frank Reich, who was just hired as the Indianapolis coach, head coach, which is, might I say, the right hire for the Colts.
Number two.
And then they also lost their quarterback coach in John DeFilippo, who is now the OC for the Vikings. So those are two pretty big hits to their coaching staff. And then you get into the roster. How many guys can they retain from the roster that they won the Super Bowl with going into next season? Because I think, Stone, you were mentioning they had some cap problems.
Yeah, they're $9 million over the cap right now, and they got to get under the cap. It's not like the NBA where you have bird rights, you can go over it. Mm-hmm. There's some potential cap casualties like Jason Peters, Brent Celek, some of the running backs, some of the defensive backs, and they're going to have a tough time getting under this cap. And then signing guys, it's one thing to get under. It's another thing to retain guys out of there, because Patrick Robinson's free agent, who had one of the highest grades for a slot corner this year. Yep. They got Nigel Bradham, who had over a bunch of tackles this year. So I mean, they got a bunch of guys they're looking to resign. But if they can't get on this cap, they're not going to be able to make any moves.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think that's a big part of it. I mean, all depending on what the roster looks like next year, how they manage to fill these holes in their coaching staff. I'm not saying they don't have a chance, because they did have a great roster from defense to offense to special teams. So they won't maybe lose that many guys, but it will be a new look Eagles next year. And with all that being said, personally, I don't think it's realistic for them to go back-to-back next year and win the Super Bowl.
I don't think it is either. And just to add to Ryan's coaching point, Deuce Staley is apparently in the mix to be the Giants' offensive coordinator. But obviously, he just hired Mike Shula. So, I mean, he might stay, or he might go somewhere else. Because you never know. Teams are always looking to pooch the winning team's coaches. Like, you know, Zach, everybody's coming for the Pats coaches.
Every year.
So, but yeah, just to go back to what I said, I don't think the Eagles are returning to the Super Bowl next year. They played a fourth place schedule this year. That means they played the scrubs of the NFC. You're not playing San Francisco next year. You're playing Minnesota, New Orleans, the Rams. Those are some tough teams.
And the NFC is stacked.
Is stacked, yeah. And now you have Carson Wentz coming back. How is he going to perform? Mm-hmm. You got all these new guys that are going to be in the mix next year. New coaches. I mean, it's going to be so tough. But let's not forget, the NFC East, no Zeke this year. Yeah. So the Cowboys are going to be back in the mix. The Giants had I don't know what was going on this
plethora
year.
Plethora of injuries.
Yeah. But they will be back. This is a fluke. And the Redskins, with Alex Smith, anything's possible. So, I mean, it's very plausible that the Eagles can go from the best to the worst next year.
I wouldn't be surprised, because when I look at their shot next year, after this year, and we've seen a bunch of times, I give anybody maybe other than the Browns a shot for the Super Bowl. But I don't expect them to be next year's Super Bowl, because, like you said, the NFC East, you have the Cowboys, Zeke, he's going to be back for a full season. Dak's going to be in his third year. Then you have the Redskins. They got better with Alex Smith, to say the least. Then the Giants, I can't imagine them having another horrible year. Odell's going to be back. They have a high draft pick too. So
potentially Saquon on that lineup.
Mm-hmm. So yeah, I'm sure they're going to be a lot more explosive. And then just the quarterbacks there is in the NFC, like NFC North. Minnesota, they barely had a quarterback.
Aaron Rodgers was hurt this year. Don't forget about that.
Yeah, Minnesota, they barely had a quarterback. Look what they did this year. Aaron Rodgers is coming back, so Green Bay's a new team. Then you have New Orleans, young, very talented team led by Drew Brees. Carolina, Atlanta, both have solid quarterbacks.
Jimmy G.
And they can win any given Sunday. And then, the NFC West is so exciting for me, because you have the Rams, Sean McVay, and Jared Goff, who are going into their second year.
Great roster.
Great roster. Even on, I say it all the time, the Rams' special teams are even good. Yeah. You know, that's crazy. All three facets of the game. And then 49ers. Like, do I have to say more after our Jimmy G segment?
Russell Wilson too.
Yep. And then, exactly. Then you have Russell Wilson too. The Seahawks, as long as they have Russell and the 12th man, they're always going to be a team that's hard to beat. So you have to go all through all that. just to make the Super Bowl again. If they were in the AFC, you have the Patriots, Steelers, Jacksonville,
maybe the
Chiefs,
Broncos.
Maybe yeah. if
and then
the
there's a drop
Patty
off.
Mahomes, yeah. yeah, then you don't have much. You know, the NFC is almost like the West and the NBA. Yeah. You know, like that's where the real competition is, and they have to get through all that to make it to the Super Bowl. I give them a shot, but nothing's in the bag for the Eli. Enjoy this ring.
That being said, how many of us can say we really expected them to make the playoffs this year?
No.
Or to make that run in the yeah, playoffs
this
year.
But I mean, like,
year.
That's how we play an easy schedule. Because you can pile up those wins. The 14-2, who are they playing? Remember that stretch of games where they played a bunch of teams under 500? Yeah. That's what happens when you play the worst, like one of the worst
that's
schedules
true.
In the NBA.
But then they got to the playoffs sorry. And they played very good teams.
Yeah. Home field advantage is huge in the NFL playoffs.
I agree. But I'm just playing devil's advocate for fun. But they were an underdog all throughout the playoffs. I mean, even me, other than the Super Bowl week, I never chose the Eagles to get past the Falcons or the Vikings. And and they surprised us every week. So mentally, from that standpoint, you see a team who doesn't care what about the outside noise, who doesn't care if they're considered the underdogs, who doesn't care if teams don't think they can go back-to-back. And with that mentality in the NFL, in a league like that, and in a sport like football, when you have that sort of camaraderie and that sort of mental toughness, you really never know what can happen.
Yeah, just going off the mentality, I mean, how are they going to come back next season? Because we saw with the Falcons this year, they did not perform as expected. I even predicted the Falcons not to make the playoffs. Because every time I can see a team, when they make the Super Bowl and they win, just how they celebrate, just how they talk after the game, that they're not going to do anything the next season. Mm-hmm. Those teams like the Falcons and the Eagles, they were happy to be there.
Yeah.
But the next season, are they going to be hungry enough to get back? Are they just going to be complacent and be like, you know what, we want to ring? We're going to take it easy this year.
And your season winning the Super Bowl is one thing. But your season coming back from a Super Bowl, hey, they wrote it on their shirts. It was in the newspaper. They're not the underdogs anymore. They are the top dogs. Every team that sees you on their schedule,
getting the best shot.
That, oh, yeah, they're ready for that
That's
day.
Very
and
true.
They're going to give you everything they have. It's like in the NBA when someone's playing LeBron or even the Golden State Warriors, you're going to have their 100% best, and they know you have the crown. You know, they're going to try to take you down, and that's what Philly better be ready for next year, because that NFC this year is going to be a lot stronger with all those injuries, all those people coming back, than it was last year.
And just to touch on Stone's point of Atlanta, I think that's a great comparison, because what's one of the biggest things I think that affected Atlanta this year after their Super Bowl
coaching.
Run? Coaching. They lost Kyle Shanahan, their OC.
Yeah.
He went on to San Francisco, and that offense just looked completely different.
Apparently, Steve Sarkisian was running Kyle Shanahan's plays. How's that supposed to work? So is Philadelphia's new OC going to be running, like, you know, Frank Reich's plays? I don't know.
I think the only thing that might be slightly different is that Doug Peterson was the main play caller in Philadelphia, so he's still there.
But just the implementing of the game plan, it could be a little bit
exactly.
different. Like
that's
the input
what I'm
that
saying.
They get in, like watching film is a little bit different. Like Frank Reich has different stuff that he might see versus the new guy that comes in and might view something else.
Yeah, it'll definitely be interesting to see how the Philadelphia Eagles fare next year.
Yeah. Final point. The Eagles are a very good team at identifying talent. I mean, Corey Clement, undrafted free agent, had a big Super Bowl.
Huge.
Yep. Jalen Mills, undrafted free agent, started for them. Patrick Robertson was garbage last year, and he's now a superstar playing slot corner. I know that hurts, Ryan.
That one hurts me, man, because I was so excited when the Colts got him, and then he didn't perform, and look at him now.
Nigel Bradham, one-year deal, phenomenal. They got a bunch of defensive linemen that Timmy Jernigan, they got him for a second-round pick. Now they paid him. He was great. Alshon Jeffrey paid off. Who's their other? J.J.I.
LeGarrette Blount.
LeGarrette Blount. Yeah. Their offense line won the best offense line of the year award this year. So I mean, I definitely give credit to their front office for identifying this talent. It's gonna be a fun season next year to see if they make it back. But you know, as all, we won't be seeing them hoisting or even playing in it for Lombardi next year.
Don't forget the website www.cjmq.fm.
So most of you know this already, but everybody here at The Huddle is a student at Bishop's University. And last week I had a test in a class called Exercise Physiology. It's a complex class looking at the human body and its different organisms. So we got the results and the average was pretty low. One of our classmates got an 80 on the test and everybody's first reaction was, well, he obviously cheated. And it makes you think, why is it that as soon as something is out of the ordinary, or in this case above average, we try to find a problem with it? That student didn't cheat. He simply was willing to put that much more effort into studying, and it paid off. The funny part in all this is when one of the students who failed actually admitted that he himself had peaked at another student's test, but still failed. No one found anything wrong with that. We all just laughed and continued to question that one classmate who had done well, trying to make him admit that he cheated. I'm sure most of you listening can relate to this, but I found this situation interesting because this happens in sports. More specifically, it's been going on since the early 2000s with a team in the NFL. Look, people, I know the NFL season is over, and the reason people hate this team is because they're always in the spotlight. But as Ryan self-proclaimed himself the people's champ, let me take the role of the voice of New England here on the show. As some of you know, my father was born in New England, Manchester, New Hampshire to be specific. Therefore, New England blood runs through my veins. I've been a Patriots, Bruins, Red Sox fan my whole life. My dad was never a big basketball guy, so I just followed LeBron, rooting for him to be greater than Jordan just so I can say I witnessed the best ever. But evidently, I do have a soft spot for the Celtics. So here we go. Let's get our hands dirty. Let's look at the New England Patriots' history of cheating. It all began with Spygate in 2007. The Patriots were caught filming the defensive signals of the New York Jets from an illegal location. I'll repeat the infraction. They were caught filming the defensive signals from an illegal location. It is 100% allowed in the NFL for a team to record another team's signals. However, it must be done from the press box. The Patriots did it from their own sideline. And before you go off and say, oh, Zach, a rule's a rule, the New York Jets got caught doing the exact same thing in 2006, just a year before. However, Commissioner Roger Goodell was not in office yet. And the Jets, obviously, were not the most dominant team in salary cap era history, as are the Patriots. And what was Commissioner Goodell's priority coming in? Ensuring parity. Some can say he even had it for the Patriots as soon as he walked into this league. But to come back to the cheating, if you can record an opponent's signals, there was no real advantage for the Patriots to do so. Listen to this. This is Willie McGinnis, a three-time Super Bowl champ with the Patriots, talking about them apparently stealing signals.
If we would have known the plays, it would have been six or seven Super Bowls instead of this.
Oh, is that what it was?
Games wouldn't have been close. Games wouldn't have been close.
Okay.
So, why would the new commissioner go after the Patriots? They had a perfect season. The one thing Roger Goodell had come to stop. And that's where Spygate was born. And what better story for the media than the most dominating team in league history? Cheating. That story caught on like wildfire. Oh, and by the way, the Indianapolis Colts were caught the same year adding artificial crowd noises against the Patriots, but no one talks about that. No one talks about the student who failed. Now let's move on to 2014, the infamous Deflategate. The Patriots were accused for deflating footballs. They didn't add grip to their balls. The balls were missing a little air. First of all, really? You could not find anything better? Air missing from the footballs? Yeah, but it makes it so much easier to throw and catch. Patriots had a 17-7 lead at the half. Close to 50% of their total yards were on the ground. And in the second half, when the balls were properly inflated, the Pats outscored the Colts 28-0. This whole thing was a scam. Want another reason why this was a scam? Here's DaQuell Jackson, the one who apparently felt the ball was soft after an interception. The play where this whole scam started.
And I would have loved to catch them in the act because we got our tails kicked.
Yep.
I would have loved to say, you know what? Yeah, that ball was under, was deflated, this, that, and the other. But no, I had no idea.
Wow. But again, there's no better story than the team going to the Super Bowl accused of cheating. So this thing blows up. And now they even suspend Tom Brady 4 games after he had won his appeal. He won his appeal because the judge said there's simply no valid proof that he was involved. But this carried on for almost 2 years until Brady said, all right, let's get it over with. I'll just have an extra 4 weeks to spend with my family and rest. But if you think I'm only defending the Patriots because they're my team, and you think, no, the media does not blow up false stories, take a listen to this. It's an official apology from ESPN to the Patriots organization for falsely publicizing stories about the Patriots cheating.
On two occasions in recent weeks, SportsCenter incorrectly cited a 2002 report regarding the New England Patriots and Super Bowl 36. That story was found to be false and should not have been part of our reporting. We apologize to the Patriots organization.
Yeah, thanks ESPN. But you know darn well this doesn't mean anything anymore. Because, of course, we focus on the person who did well on the exam because we cannot accept that that person was more prepared and simply better than the others. And we continue to ignore all the stories of those who failed but still cheated. Do you want examples? Here's the top 5 teams who were caught cheating in the NFL, and this includes filming other teams, going over the salary cap, adding crowd noises to home games, performance-enhancing drugs, and etc. Number 1, Denver Broncos, followed by the New York Jets, Indianapolis Colts, Pittsburgh Steelers, and the New York Giants. You want 6 to 10? Here's 6 to 10. San Francisco 49ers, Baltimore Ravens, Oakland Raiders, Miami Dolphins, and the Washington Redskins. You want to go up to 15? Number 11, Atlanta Falcons, followed by the Seattle Seahawks, the Green Bay Packers, Detroit Lions, and the Carolina Panthers. The Patriots are 17th on this list. They are below average. So again, I repeat what I said our first show here on The Huddle. Why can't we simply appreciate greatness? Stop trying to find a problem with a student who had a good grade because he studied hard. If you want to shame someone, shame those who cheated and still failed. This was Zach Graveson for The Huddle on CJMQ 88.9 FM. And on behalf of everybody here at The Huddle, have a great weekend. I'll see you guys next week.